like to welcome everyone to Dr. Lucille Burbank Radio. Frank McKay here. Much more importantly, the author and educator that you get to hear every week, and we encourage everyone to binge listen. She's the author of several books, including The Inside Secrets of Sesame Street. Doc, how are you?
Oh, Frank, I'm doing great. It's so good to be here.
Well, same here, right back at you. And the last time we spoke, we took on a pretty heavy topic in what makes a successful television series. And as we proved, you can't really do it in one show. We could probably do several shows on it. But let's continue. I know we covered so much of it, but where did we leave off? How do you answer this question?
I was asking Jeff Moss about good people. And remember, I asked Sam Gibbon what makes up a successful television series. And he said, you can do it with less time, you can do it with less money, but you cannot do it with bad people. And so in going there with Moss, I said to him, Jeff Moss is he was the former head writer and songwriter for Sesame Street. And so I said to Jeff Moss, overall, what do you think about the success? Why is Sesame Street a successful show? And he said to me, well, it's a real serious combination of a show that children like and that parents are happy to have their children like and that parents like it too. And most of all, they know it's good for their children. And that's a real big resource there, because parents want, ultimately, all the time, what's good for their children. And then he went on to say, you know, the characters are wonderful, especially the Muppet characters, which we were discussing before. And then he said, you know, Sesame Street keeps up with the times. It keeps changing. You know, it keeps the interest up. It never sits back and rests on its laurels. But most of all, he stressed, and this was a completely different, I didn't coax him to go there. Most of all, he stressed, it's got a very, very, very good group of people connected with it. So I thought to myself, here I've heard it again. Another person, lovely, lovely, good people, I sighed. This is lovely. Another person is stating this. So then I said to him, you know, and then I thought, I explained to him, you know, what I learned is when I had to interview the individuals that worked on Captain Kangaroo and Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and also the creators and so forth, and the producers and writers and directors, I learned something that was flabbergasted me. When I interviewed those people who had worked on the Captain Kangaroo show, what I discovered is the same people who worked on Captain Kangaroo and created its success were the same individuals who left Captain Kangaroo and pioneered Sesame Street.
Yeah.
I know. I went, all of a sudden I'm there, and Dave Cano says to me, who was the executive producer of Sesame Street, he says, well, now you know. We all came from Captain Kangaroo. I said, oh my gosh. And so Moss also worked on Captain Kangaroo. And before going to Sesame Street, he said to me, look at the people who wrote Captain Kangaroo. Look at the people who put that show together. And the people who passed through Captain Kangaroo. And you know what? It's a pretty good darn list, because they are the same ones on Sesame Street.
Yeah. Wow. Talent. I mean, that's talent. And you talk about credits we've mentioned. But I mean, real serious talent. And when you could say I worked on Captain Kangaroo and Sesame Street. There's not much more you have to say as far as television, children's television goes. I mean, that is absolutely a tremendous two-name list right there. It kind of says it all. Frank McKay here with Dr. Lucille Burbank, and we're talking about what makes a great or a successful television series. And in this particular case, we're talking about maybe the greatest children's television of all time, one of the greatest shows of all time, and still going on. Going to be celebrating the 50th anniversary. Doc, I find it hard to imagine Sesame Street without the Muppets. And the fact, and it's very hard to second guess Joan Cooney on anything, and you know, the creators of that wonderful show. But boy, what a mistake would have made! Mistake they would have made to keep Jim Henson's influence out of it.
Yeah, it really would have been a mistake. In fact, Dave Connell said to me, "Look, we produced Sesame Street. We created this show not to have a star." But it did have a star, the Muppets.
Yes.
And so they all realized pretty fast, you know, I have to give these people credit. They might have been reserved in the beginning, but they still went there. They still called in Jim Henson. They still had the foresight to say, hey, we have to keep an open mind on this. And then pretty soon, as Jim Henson is presenting to them about the Muppets, his Muppets, they all went, oh, my gosh. And then they thought of all brainstormed all these ideas that they could use the Muppets to creatively and entertainingly portray and teach the kids the curriculum. And so they're very quick. And again, no one person says no or yes. They look at the group. And as you and I both know, that a group, more heads are better than one head. Two heads are better than one. And in television, when I worked on the various TV programs, including Ed Sullivan, as I had mentioned before, but also in my work on Sesame Street, we always met as a group. When I was in research and I was working, Dr. Valeria Lovelace was my boss, and she was wonderful to work with. And when we would always come together and decide on what was the best possible way, whether we were doing a fire safety study, whether we were recommending how the workshop should talk about Mr. Hooper's death, Will Lee's death, who we went there and we told the children the honest truth that he died instead of retiring and going on vacation. We all met in a group. And I would say in media, that is one of the key things, this teamwork and these group meetings. And Sesame Street is very, very, makes that a very dominant activity. They have curricular meetings or they have this meetings, but it's always large group, small group, but it's mostly large group, and everybody comes in with their different points of view. Then everything is well thought of. Let's say if they're dealing with lead poisoning, which we had to deal with for these inner city children, and they listen to the child psychiatrist, the medical field, the teachers, and everything, and then they all come, and all this thought has gone through, and then we all come together, and we say, this is what we should do, this is what we shouldn't do, but it's all because of all these minds, and as I say, so many, you know, two heads are better than one.
Yeah, tremendous insight, and, you know, you're talking to really the best, what you're looking and we're talking about, the best example we could ever give of children's television. And it's hard to second guess anything that they say. I would almost take it as law. And I'm like that with you, because not only did you do extensive interviewing on Sesame Street, but you also did it on Captain Kangaroo, and you also did it on Fred Rogers, and you did so much research on these programs. I don't think there's anyone who has done and you're very humble, but I don't know that there's anybody who's done the comprehensive work that you've done on these three shows, which is really, let's face it, I mean, that's the heart and soul of children's television and the real start of it. And, you know, I know you point to Newton Minow saying, you know, about the...
TV is a vast wasteland.
Vast wasteland, yeah. Children's television.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. But these are the three shows that broke out of that. And, you know, it's the work that you've done on it is absolutely amazing. Thrilled to pass it on and be a small part in passing it on. Dr. Lucille Burbank Radio is in progress. Frank McKay here with the doctor. But, again, going back to Minow's statement about vast wasteland, did he ever say it after Sesame Street? Did he ever say it after those three shows that we mentioned? Or was that prior?
Well, you know, when he was mentioning at first that television is a vast wasteland, already there were forces in place to make it not so. I mean, already Sesame Street was being created, Action for Children's Television by Peggy Sharon and her group were coming up. Then there was this wonderful Surgeon General's report on violence, so that was coming up. So he really wasn't referring so much to the, he was referring to the present, but he wasn't referring to now the new forces that were coming to counteract that. He did mention it later, too. He came back, I read in a later TV guide and said it, but it had nothing really to do with Sesame Street or with all these other good shows. He really meant it as, look, and still today we're dealing with a vast wasteland in terms of television because still it's not what it should be. And still there's too much violence and still there's too much sexuality. In fact, the Public Television Council, Parents Television Council, excuse me, I don't work with, but I donate and support, and I get reports from them all the time, and they're going there. And in fact, one of Henson's children, I think it's Melissa, is on the board for the Parents Television Council. So it's still prevalent today, but it has really nothing to do with all the good shows that are there. And of course, they point out the good shows. But what Minow was really trying to say, you know, television has such potential, and we have Sesame Street, who has reached its potential. We have some other shows that have reached its potential, like Reading Rainbow, Ghost Rider, and so forth. But overall, there are more shows that are not worth watching and not reaching television's potential, and it's still occurring today.
It is, and I wonder what Henson would say about what's going on now. Did he share any strong opinions on television other than his? I know very little about Henson. You know quite a bit about Henson, but did he see other children's television as competition? Do you believe he saw his work as being unique and just different and without peer? What's your take on Henson?
Henson, as I say, it was too concerned with being the leader on a boat. Let's say you're in a kayak or something and you're the lead rower. And so he had no concern about tipping it over. In other words, worrying about what other people thinking, doing anything. All Henson did and all he loved to do is to work to his greatest potential and to be as creative. And he is a person who loves his work. He worked 16, 17, 18 hours a day in the wee hours of the night. He loved it. And it's something I want to bring up too. My research, as you were complimenting me, and thank you very much for the compliment, But it's not but, and though, the reason I was able to go there and research these shows in such depth is because I love what I do. And I love children's programming, and I love educational media. And so, and I really have respect for the mind of the child. And so it was an act of love. And when, again, when we get back to good people that you want on your side, they love what they're doing. I want to just carry on with one other point in terms of what creates a successful television program or series, if that's okay with you. Do we have time?
Oh, we do. We absolutely do. Okay. Please.
So I asked Joan Cooney, she's the co-founder of Sesame Street, and also Dr. Morissette is also the co-founder of Sesame Street. But Joan Cooney is more known. And anyway, I asked her about the success of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and Captain Kangaroo and, of course, Sesame Street and her own show, Sesame Street. And Cooney said to me, you know, I really can't talk about, I really can only talk about why Sesame Street is successful. I don't know why Captain Kangaroo lasted and why Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood lasted, because each is very peculiar. In other words, don't compare them. Don't compare them. Every show is successful for its own reasons, except that I can say the running theme is good people. And then she said to me, you know, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, Fred Rogers, who's the creator of this show, he has his own personality. He has his own intelligence, and he's very careful. He has this carefulness with the program. But he says, you know, that program really depends on just one single talent, whereas our program, it depends on many talents. So I said to her, you know, yeah, so the drawback to depending on one talent, such as Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, is that if that person really can't be replaced. In other words, when Rogers decided to retire, new episodes of the neighborhood could not be produced, and of course the show fades away. And then I got to thinking, and I said, and this is an important conclusion I came to a successful show. Not only does it have to have good people, but as I look at Sesame Street and as I reflect on the fact that Sesame Street has outlasted Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and it will be celebrating 50 years on the air in 2019. So it's outlasted all children's shows in broadcast history. I said to myself, I'm going to go there and dare to make this recommendation. So this is the recommendation I made. I said, future productions in children's television should view the resource of people, and of course, this is including good people,
sure,
as significant as they view the resource of money. And
yeah.
And that was like, oh my gosh, I think I'm on to something here.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, this study has given me this concept of, oh my gosh, people can now be viewed, good people can now be viewed as significant as the money in developing a show.
Wow. You're absolutely...
I know. It blew my mind, Frank. Yeah. It blew my mind.
You're absolutely right. And wonderful insight, as always, Dr. Lucille Burbank on Dr. Lucille Burbank Radio. We encourage everyone to binge listen. Frank McKay here. Anything you want to close with? Anything you want to add?
Yeah. One more thing, and it ties about our caveat that we mentioned in the previous show about Facebook and listening to your intuition.
Yep.
And, okay, so then I go on to say, all right, how are we going to make sure that these people hiring for their television shows, whatever, whether it's prime time or children's or whatever, how are we going to make sure that they get good people? And so then I said, all right, you know, I've read DeBecker's book. And I said, so this is, I said to them, okay, look, what you need is good people. So practically speaking, when you're going to hire good people, you have to rely on your intuition during the interview. I don't care if everything is in order. I don't care if this person has all the correct credentials. I don't care if you looked into his or her background. But if something comes up, if something doesn't seem right to you in talking to this person, then go there. Don't dismiss, don't deny it because all the right credentials are there or you looked into his or her background. And so then we get into, you know, of course, I mentioned DeBecker's book.
Yeah.
And now I practice using my intuition constantly and watching out. And I thought, gee, I'm good at this. And then until almost the second time it happened to me on Facebook with a romance scammer. So I said to myself, okay, the denial's still there. So keep working and practice the power of practice of listening to your intuition and making sure you're not denying. And the more you do that, the quicker you get at it and the quicker your intuition will just come up as big as life and you won't be able to push it away. And that's the goal. That is the goal. And we all, you know, I read the book, but now I'm rereading it again. I mean, this is a book you can read a couple of times because it is a classic and you just get things from it. But again, it takes practice, but it is so worth it. And as you keep listening to those little signals and you keep catching yourself, if you dismiss them, because you can always go back in your mind. Let's say you make a mistake. You can always go back in your mind and look at the signals you didn't listen to. Then you will get it and your intuition will be the prime source of your protection. And don't we want that for every individual?
You better believe it. It's so important. Great message. I appreciate you sharing that experience with us and the insight. You know, practice your intuition. And it's something that you don't hear that often, but it's true. Practice your intuition, and if something doesn't feel right, it probably isn't right, and you probably have reason to have trepidation. Doc, I want to thank you for all the insight here, and just wonderful. Always, just great stuff on everything, whether it's children's television or whether it's something more serious in nature, and that's the scamming, the romance scamming. Just wonderful work. Thank you very much, Dr. Lucille Burbank.
Oh, my pleasure. And, you know, just it's been my pleasure to be here and to share and, you know, to tell everybody that, you know, I love them.
Yeah. Well, I'm right back at you, and they love you. And everyone who gets to know you loves you, and I'm sure anybody listening is of that same mind. I love you, too. So, listen, you're wonderful.
Thank you.
Dr. Lucille Burbank, thank you once again.
You're welcome. My absolute pleasure.
Frank McKay signing off for the Dr. Lucille Burbank Show. Thank you, and we encourage everyone to binge listen to everything we're doing here. We'll see you next time on Dr. Lucille Burbank Radio.